It's Rake the Moon episode 13, but unlucky for who? Up for discussion, who's really 100% confident about anything? A Swindon Town statement says Clem Mulfooney is now in sole possession of Wiltshire's leading football entity, but how and why? Privilege, yes. How much of a privilege is it to really face 2 hours plus under oath on Monday morning, being asked forensic questions about where money went and when by an Australian liquidator? Some thoughts on Clem Mulfooney's ongoing liquidation case down under. And yes, we'll talk about the bit that happens on the green stuff too. It's crunch time in Cambridge. Can Swindon put one over Neil Harris when it matters? All on Rake the Moon this week. But before we get to the heavyweight stuff of ownership and semi-legal court cases, and a trip to the Abbey Stadium, the banter section. So as we are here trying to negotiate our way through episode 13, Sam, are you a superstitious man? I don't like to see single magpies.
I guess sort of. I developed a habit when I was in my teens of putting on my left shoe first, on my left boot first when I was playing sport, and it kind of just stuck. And I don't know whether I would call it superstitious, because I'm not sure that it does anything. But at the same time, I must now put on my left shoe first, whatever shoe it is. It's moved away from just sport. And it's also got to the point now when I've been dressing my children as they've grown up, that I must put on their left shoe first. And if Fred, my oldest, has put on his right shoe first, I get a little bit frantic about it for no particular reason. I try not to let him know about it because he'd think that I'm quite odd. But I guess that sort of counts under superstition, or is it habit? Because the two things are they've got quite a shared spot on the Venn diagram. And there are many things that I've found habitual. But I don't know, where's the boundary between habit and superstition?
I suppose maybe do you fear something bad will happen if for any reason the right shoe has to go
on? Not really, no. I just think that it's the wrong way to do it. that's it, for whatever reason. It's just been sort of programmed into myself. But I don't think that anything bad will happen. For a long period, I would avoid any sort of scaffolding or ladders. I would walk in a road to avoid scaffolding. But I don't know whether that just sort of started as a nervousness of something dropping from above. But really, if you're walking around the edge of a scaffolding, you're more likely to have something fall on your head than if you walk underneath it. So whatever I was doing was fairly daft then as well. But I don't think I'm massively superstitious. No, what's yours about? Where did that come from?
I think the magpies just seems to be a sort of family thing handed down. So I know there's the song, you know, one for sorrow, two for joy, and all that. But yeah, I think there are sort of a couple of associations of bad associations with single magpies to prove this. Never mind all the times, of course, where we've seen one magpie and nothing of relevance has happened whatsoever. But yes, if there's one magpie around, I'd be very disappointed not to see a second one at some point on the journey. So if say I'm heading to the Abbey Stadium, then I see one magpie, I will be. Very much checking within the confines of road safety for a second, if I possibly can, on the assumption that it will do any good. I doubt it does, but there we are. But if you're a right shoe first person or a magpie obsessed person,
left shoe first. Let's get it clear.
Well, I wanted to see what happened to the right shoe people, to see if bad things befall them.
Go on, write in. That was write in, dear listeners, and tell us: are you a left shoe first or a right shoe first, or couldn't you care less?
I think I know which would win on an internet poll. Right, let's get cracking on the serious stuff. So let's start then with the ownership news. Quite a sort of 48 hours for Clem Mulfooney. We'll come on to this kind of Australian case in a bit, but the statement emerging somewhat out of the blue, I think, that Clem Mulfooney is now in 100% control, as it's described by Swindon in their fairly concise club statement on the matter, where they also say this is a good thing. As can happen and does happen, this does raise a certain amount of questions and hopefully we'll try and provide some answers, though it's very difficult. We've been waiting for a certain amount of time for Clem Morfuni to buy back the shares of the two minority holders, the Kylies and the Paladorios, although that's been listed for a while now as fairly low on the priorities. Yet this statement sort of pops up out of the blue. So what did you make of it, Sam, when it hit your inbox, I guess, and what more have you been able to discern?
Well, I think the interesting part of this is that it doesn't mention Messrs. Kylie or Paladorio at all. And it is not entirely clear how, when, or if they've been consulted and or paid for any of their shareholding to achieve this. I can't speculate with any degree of certainty those conversations and how they will have taken place, but I'm sure there must have been at least some sort of notification to those individuals that this was happening. What will be interesting to see is whether we get any more clarity on that. We've asked the club for the opportunity to speak to a senior member of the C-suite to ask about these particular questions. I'm not expecting to get that opportunity by the sounds of it. And I think it's interesting to just find out how that action was achieved, though inevitably the answer would be this is a private business. We don't need to tell you everything that goes on here. But for multiple reasons, at the moment it's not entirely clear how this process came about. I think it's key, first of all, to understand what the previous structure or what the current structure, I don't know whether this has actually formally gone through any listings with the relevant authorities. But previously, the club was owned by a series of companies. The individual business of the football club is Swindon Town Football Company. That's been the business that's been around for years and years and years. There was a parent company called Seabec 87, which was originally the vehicle which Jed McCrory used to take control of the club from Andrew Black when Mr. Black decided to sell on a whim all those years ago. And that then subsequently was usurped by Swinton 20 Reds, the Swinton with evidently being a typo with someone filing a company very quickly with Companies House, which has sat for a number of years as being the top of the chain. So that was the Lee Power company that had control. And then that was added to on top of it with a business above it, which is Axis Football Investments. And I guess that there's a lot of muddiness when you have a corporate structure that has multiple companies that are come together to form a chain. And so when the club says it adds clarity to the ownership, in one way, it sort of adds clarity to the structure whilst at the same time not adding any more clarity at all as to what's actually gone on, because there were other shareholders in Swinton 20 Reds, namely the Kylies and the Paladorios, held by the partners of Chris Kylie and Eddie Paladorio. And I guess we should also in a moment give some background on who they are for those who aren't so aware. But at this stage, it is not immediately clear what has happened to their shareholding there and whether they've been recompensed. I reached out to Mr. Kylie to comment about this and he declined to comment. So I am very much unable to give any real additional information other than that which has been publicly communicated. I think the important thing here is to say that there are questions that remain unanswered, and it would be good if we could get that additional clarity from the club, because ultimately over recent years, the track record of doing deals around the ownership, around shareholding, has created this lack of trust. And whenever there is an opportunity to rebuild trust, you would hope that the club would try to do it. At the same time, they will say, none of your business, you know, piss off, go and do something else. And I can understand why they might take that approach, but I can tell them that there will be a lot of voices asking a lot of similar questions until those questions are answered. Does that give any sort of background, or have I been truly ambiguous?
No, I think so. Before we say who Chris Kiley is, I would have to say, unless you're a much better man than you are, I'm not sure I've ever seen Chris Kiley, let alone been able to get hold of him at any kind of shape or form. I may have seen him at Gillingham once, but that was a presupposition of mine, given he looked quite like Dean Kiley, was younger and used to be on the books of Gillingham. So for those sort of listening to who would think the logical thing would be to go and get some clarity from the other two minority owners, it's not always as straightforward as you might hope. Do you want to sort of do the filling in? We have assumed a certain degree of knowledge from our listeners here, because obviously this is a Swindon Town podcast and those names have come up, but they have held minority shareholdings now for a fair amount of time.
Yeah, for several years. And this was the shareholding that was initially undisclosed and only came out publicly as a result of a confirmation statement change by the club, and obviously resulted in the sort of situation where Rob Angus was having to front up with perhaps not all of the information that he might have been blessed with to communicate with fans. My understanding of the situation, and I'm sure many supporters are aware, but some might not be, is that Chris Kiley came in as an investor, as a partner in the business, quite early on in Clem Morfuni's reign, and it was his funding in part which helped to clear the debentures which were triggered by a former owner and an associate of a former owner when the club was in need of some fast cash about 3.5 years ago. He was, for a period, quite intimately involved in terms of driving a certain style of recruitment and play. And you know, he has a data business that was involved with the club. He, as far as I'm aware, has completely taken a back seat over the last couple of years, and is not involved on a day-to-day, doesn't really go to matches. I wouldn't say much for the relationship between the primary shareholders at this point either. But he is certainly a man who likes to keep himself to himself and is not known for wanting to speak to the media. So it's very hard to be able to give a full perspective as to where he stands. Eddie Parladorio was the club's lawyer. So if you look in the first few instances of the advisory board meetings, he actually sat on that back in the day when it began. And advised Mr. Morfuni over various matters previously. The general interpretation, though it's not known clearly, was that this is possible that he was granted a shareholding for services rendered. It feels like that way rather than being investment upfront. Again, it's not easy to be able to say with any authority that that is the case. Anyway, he's not been acting for the club so much in recent years, or at all, even. So he had the smaller stake, so or through his partner, Bethany, had around about 5%, and Chris Kiley had around about 17 to 18% of the companies in the middle of this Swindon Town sandwich. And now we're only left with the bread.
Yes, and I must also say that I have attempted to contact the Palladorios by email before in the past, and reply there was none. So sometimes we are trying, but it as private citizens, they are not forced to speak to members of the media. So I suppose the worry is that the minority shareholders are not happy with however this has come about, and decided to take it further. That would seemingly be the worst of all worlds, though we have no evidence at the moment that they want to do so.
Yeah, and unless we know what the deal or lack thereof was with the elimination of the two companies in the middle of the Swindon Town sandwich, then it's hard to be able to give an absolute and reliable idea of what will happen next. it does feel that whilst there was some certainty in the statement released by the club, which you would expect, without a couple of answers to these questions, it feels like the whole story is still open-ended, and that there are other things that have the possibility of happening, even if they don't come to pass in the end. So it would be good to get some clarity on the mechanics of that part of the deal, and to make sure that this club, which has been unfortunately too familiar in recent years and beyond of dealings with courtrooms and with technicalities and regulation and all that sort of stuff, it would be good to have some sort of confidence that it's not going to become embroiled in something like that in the future. But I guess we only have to wait and see. And there's not really much more that at this stage we can offer with any sort of clarity or conviction. And it's not really our place to introduce anything that is not a fair reflection of what's happening at the moment. So from a personal perspective, in my opinion, it doesn't feel like necessarily everything has been answered that needs to be answered here. Whether or not we'll get any further answers ever is to be seen. Well, Andrew, I spent my Sunday night on the phone with Thames Water trying to get the supply to my village turned back on. But you had a very different evening as the week began, being in a virtual courtroom listening to testimony in Australia. Two very different experiences. I wonder which was the more exhilarating.
I certainly think there was a level of intrigue in the one I had, although I might prefer mine simply for the reason of having a flushable toilet, which clearly sounds like an advantage that we should not let go to waste slightly. But yes, I did kind of click to the link, and it was kind of publicly available for the hearing that Clem Morfuni was involved in, to do with the dissolution essentially of one of his Axis business in Australia, which has become of kind of considerable interest to the liquidator there. And I think there's a company called the Shaw Group who are particularly keen in getting some money that they feel they are owed. So it was quite a strange experience, not least because for whatever reason the feed I had, you could see the liquidators and I think it's recorder or registrar who's in charge of the court. My Australian legal knowledge is not as pristine as it should be, but you couldn't actually see Clem Morfuni while he was giving evidence. So it was all rather strange, but it was interesting to tune into even in the darkness of the very early hours of a Monday morning.
Now, Clem and the club have always said that the business's activity away from Swindon Town bears no relation to Swindon Town. From the summaries that have been given, there was, however, some mention of Swindon Town within this hearing. Can you give some clarity on that?
Yes. So there was. So essentially, I think this hearing is the liquidator trying to find out or trying to get some extra clarity on when Clem Morfuni was a director of the company that he wound up, what happened to various sums of money that went in and out of that company at different times. It feels like his sort of purpose is to sort of understand where money went and why, and whether that was all kind of done within the appropriate nature of the sort of rules of winding up. You shouldn't, in essence, I think you shouldn't really be taking money out of a company that you know is going to get wound up when it's got debts to pay. So I think they're trying to find out to that. But there was at least one mention of money going through the Axis Group directly to Swindon. This is in July 2021. So Swindon Town did get a mention in the case, and he says on the sort of specific case, it was how his accountant advised to do it, and he said it was The money had to come in Swindon in a hurry. So I think if my timeline's right, we may be around the sort of time where Swindon did need to raise cash to pay for those debentures. And he says he put the money in after refinancing his properties to give cash to Swindon. And like I say, that the accountant advised him to do it. There were, I mean, literally questions about dozens of payments as well. And there's another one about $1.3 million coming into the accounts of this company from Axis Football. And again, he talked about the refinancing that he needed to do. So Swindon has now come up in this case in that, you know, some of the money flows that have gone in and out of Swindon Town have become part of what the liquidator wants to know. But like I said, I think my perspective is on it. The liquidator wants to know a ton of stuff about a ton of different things. And the actual amount that Swindon got mentioned in the case is pretty sort of insubstantial compared to everything else. But it is there, and it was something that the liquidator, who is a pretty persistent chap, wanted to inquire about. I hope that makes some sort of sense.
It does. And was there mention of what happens next in this particular case? So do we know of the next hearing date, or is there anything that the liquidator will now look to do before it can move forwards?
Well, I don't know. I don't think there was any immediate sort of kind of wrapping up and dates given further. I think essentially, as much as I can gather, what happens is the liquidator kind of goes away. Presumably will go away and look over the evidence given. And I should say, going back to the start, the reason why I said put privilege in front was because this, although it's not a criminal hearing, is kind of done under oath. So Clem Mulfooney was kind of on oath on the stand, but what he could do was say privilege to make sure that any answers didn't kind of incriminate himself in a legal case. And so clearly the advice from his lawyer was to say privilege every time. Hence, I heard the word privilege a lot before every sentence, to the point where it's quite disorientating. Anyway, I'm getting distracted from your question, but as far as I know, I think we are still in the hands of the liquidator to kind of see what he makes of it and what happens next, really. So I can't imagine this is going to be a sort of quick process where suddenly there'll be a whole tumble of dominoes. So that's the frustrating thing. But there was a mention of Swindon, a couple of mentions of payments going in and out. So it does feel like the club, even tangentially, is not entirely free of this case. So here we are, a good 20 plus minutes in, and let's talk about football, because I'm not saying I'm tense about the game with Cambridge United is coming up. After the press conference today, I did go into a supermarket to buy a couple of items, swished them through the requisite automatic till, and then wandered off without in fact paying for them for a minute, until I realized I had not in fact paid for the goods that I had acquired, and so came back. So I may be somewhat distracted by the match coming up with Cambridge. I don't know how you feel about it, Sam, if you have any kind of confidence that Swindon can kind of defy the odds and lay a significant glove on a side that have lost just one home game all season.
I don't have the confidence that I would like to have, no. Holloway, when asked about whether it was a must-win, was more like a must-not-lose scenario. I can sort of understand that, unless Notts County win and MK Dons get points, and then it starts to really stretch and become more of an issue. And we do have to take these six games as a whole. And if you've got, say, 14 points maybe good enough, maybe, then it doesn't necessarily matter if they either lose or draw this game, but for all sorts of reasons it feels like they've got to get something out of it. And the evidently the amount of momentum and confidence that would be taken from a win against this team in that environment would be substantial, but no, I can't get myself to believe in it. Unfortunately, it is beyond me. I can't even sell the concept to myself. So I'm not going to try and sell it to you, dear listener. I would love to be proved wrong. I think Holloway's right when he's preempting a bit of a physical game that's heavy on set pieces. If that is the case, then Swindon will need Ryan Tafazoli to be the rock and the tree, the royal oak in the middle of that defence. But he's only one man, and you're still not totally confident with everything else around him from those sorts of situations. It will be a huge physical test, and but they've scored goals, they create chances, but this is a stingy defence. And I don't know about you, Andrew, but I do not go into the game with any sort of belief, which is a shame, but maybe that's the best way to be.
I have an instinct for pessimism, but I suppose my hope comes down to the fact that Cambridge games are, at the moment especially, appear to be pretty sort of tight, quite narrow. Neither side appears to get a lot of opportunities or particularly kind of create a lot. I guess Cambridge kind of play to make sure not much happens, or only the sort of things they happen once to happen. And Swindon do usually find a way to score a goal. So if they did manage to score first, which is clearly going to be difficult against the league's meanest defence, then I think it might get interesting, because I'm not sure how comfortable Cambridge are sort of playing from behind. I'll have to dig around a bit more and see how they kind of respond to going a goal to nil down. But of course they don't. They don't do that very often. But I suppose a draw works in the sense that just having a look at the other fixtures, which are almost kind of chiselled in my brain now. So the Easter Monday ones, no one is really sort of playing anyone else in the top six. But then after Swindon played Colchester on the sort of next Friday, you've got the kind of Super Saturday, as it were, where Bromley take on MK Dons and Cambridge at home to Notts County. And then Cambridge have got Bromley after that. So perhaps if you get a draw here, and then you can put the foot down a bit against sides who don't have so much to play for, maybe you can get to that sort of 82, 83 point mark, which has been enough in recent seasons to get you promotion. So there's a sort of narrow path there where I think a draw can still work in their favour, but it's going to be difficult. But I'm just not sure I see too much between any of the sides up at the top. So that gives me some hope that Swindon perhaps come out and steal something. It's quite a sort of tight path, I must say, towards getting the top three. But maybe last weekend showed a bit of signs of everyone being on edge. And you must have been thrilled to see Bromley actually lose a game at last and maybe start to push towards your prediction.
It's got to happen at some point, isn't it? They've got such a tough run in here. I really hope that they go up and that they're not caught by anybody. Well, at least not caught by more than two. But I have to still stick with my prediction, don't I? Even though I can hope that they go up whilst also wanting to be proved right, I guess. It's a tricky one. On the subject of miserly defences, obviously they are the most miserly, but Swindon have scored five against the second most miserly defence in the division this season, 5 out of 33 against Oldham. And they've scored 3 out of 29 against Cambridge. So can we hold on to something here? Maybe we've got the number of this particular team, even if this particular team has got the number on a lot of other sides in the league.
It would be nice to think so, wouldn't it? But yeah, that is a delightful statistical quirk, how they've scored lots of goals against Oldham and against Cambridge. I was going to say that 3-2 at the start of the season perhaps feels a bit untypical, and maybe Cambridge were finding their feet a bit, having come down a division. But yeah, you never know. Maybe there is some form of Wiltshire kryptonite, and there can be some kind of more Glenn Hoddle Swindon side coming out against a more John Beck style Cambridge side for those of us still slightly trapped in the football 90s until our last days.
I'm only trying to find a positive, Andrew. This is me coming in with no belief and trying to find some sort of grapple hold to be able to climb the wall just to get pop my head over and start believing before these last six games. But as I've mentioned many times already, I have booked off from all family duties the 10th and the 15th of May. So I'm well clear. No, I haven't booked off completely the 25th of May.
No, that's good. I'm not certain, but I do find it unusual for me to be on the more hopeful side of something. My instincts tend to be cautious, but like I say, I don't think there's a massive amount between these teams. So it just takes a little something to go your way on the evening, you know, deflection somewhere, you know, one loose piece of defending from a set piece where the header just drops in the right place or something like that. That might be all it has to come down to. And then, you know, suddenly if Swindon do sneak a win there, everything kind of changes, even with Cambridge having a game in hand as well. And, you know, the teams in their various games on Easter Saturday suddenly look a bit more, you know, look a bit more complicated, because you've got Salford and Notts County playing each other, and Bromley are off to the snuffer out of League Two promotion dreams in Barnet, who've already, you know, knocked over MK Dons and Cambridge in their last two matches. So we're doing the usual, well, if they lose here, this is a tough game there kind of stuff, which is all late season fare. But yeah, clearly it's odds against Swindon getting top three, but I refuse to completely close the book on it just yet. And I still think there's a reasonable chance that they can stretch it out a bit longer by at the very least not losing. So yes, a reminder, we do want to hear from people who put on one shoe in first in particular, as well as their football expertise or your opinions, thoughts, on comments on what we've talked about on the ownership or the football side. Get in contact. We're always delighted to hear from you in the channels the Moonraker provides. And a reminder, a subscription for Sam's reporting and the ability to get some kind of comment out of Chris Kiley, even if it's a no comment, you can pay the princely sum of just £5 a month, or an even lower fee if you decide to take up your subscription for a full calendar year. How did you